The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Support for this show comes from the world-famous annual International Yoga Festival in Rishikesh, India. Deepen your practice, explore your soul, and expand your consciousness in the lap of the Himalayas, the birthplace of yoga with yogis from around the world. Learn more at internationalyogafestival.org.
From Spirituality and Health magazine, this is Essential Conversations. Our guest today is Dr. Bruce Lipton. He's a stem cell biologist, the author of a number of books, including The Biology of Belief and Spontaneous Evolution. He's an internationally recognized leader in bridging science and spirituality, and that's really, I think, where we're going to go today. His essay, How and Why to Let Go of Fear, appears in the September-October issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. Bruce Lipton, welcome to Essential Conversations.
I am so honored to be here with you in this wonderful audience because having been a conventional scientist for most of my life and then finding this other community, I am so happy to be here. So thank you for this opportunity, Rabbi.
Well, it's our pleasure. So because the show is always constrained by time, let's just jump in on what you call the elephant in the room in your essay, and that's the sixth mass extinction. So it's sort of depressing, but give us some sense of what the sixth mass extinction is, and how can I profit from it?
Well, if you're Esso or Exxon, let's go back and recognize that there are five previous what we call mass extinctions of life, and these are events that occurred over millions of years ago, where from 70 to 90% of life gets wiped out after some particular incident. The last one was 66 million years ago, and that's when the ecology environment was thriving, but it was filled with dinosaurs and things like that. And apparently, an asteroid hit near Mexico, and this giant asteroid upended the environment, and 70 to 90% of life got wiped out, including, of course, the dinosaurs got wiped out. Today, we are in what is called the sixth mass extinction. I said we're in it. We're already in it. I'll give you some examples of numbers that are just like take your breath away when you realize the magnitude of it. They took a survey of how many animals were on planet Earth in 1970, and they just recently redid the survey again, and two-thirds of the animals have disappeared. So since 1970, we've lost two-thirds of animal life on this planet, one-third. So mass extinction is 70-90%. Well, there's 66% right there. But we're also down 90% of the fish in the sea with an extinction date of 2048, meaning by 2048, there will be no fish in the ocean on planet Earth due to overfishing, pollution, destroying the breeding grounds. The very interesting study just came in last week from Germany. They've been for 27 years have been a survey of the insect populations in their national parks. They now calculated in the 27 years since they started, they're down 75%, so only 25% of the insects are left. So the relevance why all this is happening is that there's an upheaval in the environment and nature is being upended. And where we come into it is, well, the previous mass extinctions were due to like comets hitting the Earth or massive geological activity. The current mass extinction is directly attributed to human behavior. It says the way we're undermining nature and exploiting the environment and just throwing everything out of balance is causing this extinction. And which people have to really know is that includes us. NASA, in a massive study, revealed that in a couple of decades, there will be an irreversible collapse of industrial civilization. So we're in a state of chaos at this moment. And well, you look outside and you go, oh, my God, this is really scary. Things are upside down. I mean, every level of crisis that we're dealing with is collectively part of the major crisis of this extinction event. And so where's the light at the end of the tunnel here? And basically it comes down to this. We cannot build a sustainable civilization on the foundation that we're presently living in, because the foundation of our culture is what's causing the mass extinction. And crisis precipitates evolution. When you hit the wall, you have to do something different at this point. So what we're seeing is a transition where we're beginning to learn that to survive on this planet, we cannot do it the old way. It's falling apart at every level, political, economic, religious, healthcare, everything's falling apart. But it's an interesting part because you need to go through a chaos if you're going from structure A and transforming into structure B. There's a in-between little period of chaos where it looks like it's all just falling down and random, but it's actually, no, one system is giving way to another system. And so for my important hopeful message at this moment is when you see the crises that are surrounding us, rather than being in fear of these crises, in fact, we must welcome these crises for a simple reason. They're causing us to create a new foundation for our world. And without that new foundation, extinction is looming. And this is not in 1,000 years. We're talking within 100 years. This place will be upside down compared to the way we see it. So it's a wake-up call. It says that we're moving. We're evolving. There's a new version of civilization forming right now. And the exciting part for me is I'm talking to a community of what I would call cultural creatives, people who are seeking new answers and new insights into life and how we can move through it. And that's why I'm in deep appreciation of being here and having this opportunity to talk, Rabbi.
So let me ask you this. I mean, this one we did to ourselves. I mean, nobody from another planet just hurled a meteor at Mexico. I imagine the president might have said if we had a wall up back then in the dinosaur times, it might have helped us out. But it wasn't done by plan. That's what I'm going to assume here. I know some of our listeners might say, no, God planned the whole thing. But and Einstein was wrong in that case. You know, God doesn't play dice with the universe. God bowls, and we ended up with the end of the dinosaurs. But this one we did to ourselves. Why do you think that we need to survive at all? Maybe this is as far as humans get. And then this is what happens. You get a civilization like ours that is built on a fundamentally suicidal, self-destructive, psychosocial archetype. And this is the end of it. And the whole thing has to come to an end for something else to emerge. But it wasn't like dinosaur 2.0. So it won't be human 2.0. It'll be who knows what.
Well, that's it. This is really the interesting part of the moment. It's like, what is the outcome? The answer is, I can't tell you what the outcome. Nobody can tell you what the outcome is because it's in a state of upheaval at this moment. Very interesting fact is this is not the first time that advanced civilization has faced a crisis like today. There's a history of this. In fact, they uncovered a city called Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. And what's interesting about the city, it was a massive city with an advanced civilization. What's interesting is that they actually physically covered up the city. I mean, it wasn't like erosion and dirt and dust has piled up on it. They physically covered up their entire city. Don't ask me why. They disappeared, whoever they were. But here was the point. This was over 10,000 years ago. And the relevance about that is in our conventional history books, we say, oh, civilization started like in the Tigris-Euphrates basin of, 5,000 BC. And I'm going like, geez, come on, man, 5,000 years before that, this massive civilization existed and they left. And it's like, who are they? Where are they? What happened? The only thing I can tell you right now, because it's a parallel, is the time of their exodus is linked to a period of climate change. And what's real interesting is because if you go where the city is in Turkey, it's somewhat of an arid desert kind of environment. And the point about it is this, there was no way they could grow food in that area to support a large population. So on the surface, it looks like climate change forced them to go find other places to live because they were no longer able to grow food.
Well, that makes sense, except in your essay, one of the things you say is there's no place for us to go now. Now, some people will talk about getting off the planet. I know that's not necessarily where you want to take, that's not what you're suggesting. But where do we go? There,
you think, where they, we go is, yeah. The first thing we have to learn is how come we have this issue with nature? And it's very simple and very obvious. And it starts with actually the concept of Genesis. And that is, first nature was created, and then humans were like added on as an option on another day. And the simple reality is, well, that disconnects us consciously from the environment, because like, oh, we were here to have dominion over the environment and it was created for us and all that kind of stuff. It's like, well, that's not really the face of it. And truth is, we evolved from this environment. We are part of this environment, that everything in this environment underneath us led to us being where we are. So it was not an accident. It was an evolutionary process. And the relevance about that is right now is we have taken that for granted, that somehow we are separate from nature. You can do whatever the heck you want on the planet. It's like, no, we have lost what the Aboriginal people have already known, especially like First Nation people here in Canada or Native Americans in the U.S. They knew 10,000 years ago that the role of humans was being a gardener in this beautiful garden.
Well, you know, that it's interesting you bring it up that way, because I mean, now you're in my bailiwick, Genesis, right? So the first chapter of Genesis says exactly what you said. It's called the alien invasion theory of humanity, that everything was going fine. The garden was blossoming, earth was fecund, everything was functioning perfectly, and then we showed up in order to, you know, take control. And it's a disaster, and I get that. Genesis 2, on the other hand, says exactly what you just said, that in the second story of creation in Genesis 2, nothing is growing, and the Bible says there's two things that are missing. One is water, and the other are gardeners. And first the water comes, and then the human being is created directly from the earth. In the English, you missed the pun, but in the Hebrew, it's the earthling from the earth, Adam from Adama. And it says that you're here to be the gardener, that our role is to midwife the creativity of nature, to care for the garden and not to dominate it. But as you said, we've gone with Genesis 1. We see ourselves as offlanders. And a lot of us believe in a religion that says, you know, this world is just a stepping stone to the better world, and that's where we're going. And so, you know, we make a mess of this place because we don't, you know, it's a rental.
Well, Rabbi, that's absolutely true. And it's unfortunate because that is what has led to our dismissing our relationship with this relationship with the planet. And yet the planet is coming around. It's very clear. The garden is, by definition, a place of harmony and cooperation. That's what a garden is all about. Unfortunately, in our Darwinian culture, which has captivated the world, we've turned this garden into, you know, a struggle for survival and, you know, fighting and competition and all that kind of stuff. It's like the idea that the garden is a battleground is like that. That's like totally outside of the understanding of nature, that we've been living so inappropriately on this planet that what we've done is forgotten how powerful we are in influencing this pattern. When we were just local people in a local community, the world was so big, it was like, you know, we were irrelevant. But today's world, it's not humans are irrelevant. Humans are a major force that is destabilizing the system because of our belief system that there's always more. And the reality is, well, look, there's a box and the earth is in this box and that's all you got. And what we have to really come back to is learning to live in harmony with it. So the beautiful part about it is it doesn't mean we end, but it really means that in the immediate future, we're going to have to learn to live in a completely different way than the cultures have supported for the last couple of hundred years. The whole idea of violence and competition is an erroneous picture for evolution, because evolution is really based on leading cooperation and community. A garden, by definition, is a community. That to be in the garden, we have to be a member of a community and not be dominating the system, especially with a lack of awareness that we are using in treating the environment at this point.
So you write about this, the changing of beliefs in spontaneous evolution. So this book is almost, I guess, 8 years old. You co-wrote it with Steve Bierman. And in that book, if I have my memory serves, you focused on the need for humanity to change, for us to change our beliefs and therefore our behaviors. And you're saying the same thing, you know, now. That's tough. You know, I mean, you're saying it only goes back a couple of centuries. I would suggest it goes back thousands of years. This belief that we really don't fit in, at least, I don't know, maybe that's just Western culture and maybe not.
That is a difference with Eastern and Western culture, because Eastern has always been a community locked into environment and ecology. I mean, they've always lived with nature and read nature and lived through that awareness. And we sort of disconnected, have lost the voice of talking with nature. But the beautiful part is there are still indigenous people here that have that wisdom, who should be sitting at their feet. And getting the insights of how to communicate with this living thing called nature, because our disconnect is really where the problem is. And yet, it doesn't, you know, as I said, well, the bad news, the old system is falling down. Well, it's not really bad news, because if the old system maintains itself, extinction is looming very quickly on the horizon. So good news, the system is breaking down. But the better news is, there's a way of putting it back together again, where we learn to live in harmony and recognize that the evolution that we're facing is not the evolution of an individual organism, it's the evolution of the community. And in this particular case, it's going to be the evolution of the community of humans, where we see ourselves as a dispersed population of separate people with separate borders and countries and walls and belief systems and all that. And yet, if you see it from a biological point of view, we are each human a cell in the forming body of something bigger, a super organism called humanity. And that's why the barriers and the walls between nations and things are destabilizing, because the idea of separation is where the problem comes from. When we recognize we're all in the same body, the idea of hurting each other would be like, yeah, which organ do you want to fight? Which organ in your body? It's like, what are you talking about? It's like, yeah, but we're killing ourselves. It's equipped of autoimmune disease, self-destruction. Wake up.
Yeah. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I mean, you're looking at it from as a biologist. You could look at it from an astrophysicist, I suppose, or cosmology perspective. When I had a synagogue at the front of the synagogue, we had, you know, the Jewish flag and the American flag. We also had the Earth flag. And the idea was, this was really your home. The promised land was planet Earth itself. And we used the Earth flag icon is the photograph of the Earth floating in the blackness of space taken by the Apollo astronauts.
Rabbi, that is the seed. That was a seed. That image was a seed for the new civilization in 1969. And it's really part of a fractal picture that civilization's evolution is a parallel to the evolution of animals from invertebrates through the vertebrate level. The seeding in 1969, what it did to those people, the hippies who were back there at that time, they saw that, oh my God, that's all there is, that beautiful blue-green thing. And all of a sudden the idea of, oh, we got to nurture the planet. We have to nurture ourselves. We have to take care of the babies, the air, the water. That was the seed. I go, nurturing is the character of mammals. And the civilization that was seeded in 1969, when that evolutionary picture of the Earth on the moon's horizon was revealed, was the foundation of a new civilization. But if you go back, the head civilization at that moment was called the reptiles. And the reptiles are the machines, the big giant dinosaurs, which are corporations. And they suppressed this mammalian generation because, first of all, they were kids. They had no money. They had no influence in 69. But now their grandchildren and the elders that were struck by that imagery of, my God, take care of this place, are into positions of power now. And so as we're evolving in this chaos into something new, there's the image of those hippies is going to be replaying through this. And that's where nurturing and love, you know, that was all the summer of love and harmony and peace and all that. That is what we're moving into as the dinosaurs, the corporations are beginning to falter, and also recognize the dinosaur civilization was powered by oil, the blood of the dinosaur, which is running out, which is also spelling an end to that version of civilization. So we're in an evolutionary upheaval, which is exciting, going from a dinosaur fight each other, competition, violent world into a world of nature and nurture and harmony and love. As individuals are realizing the drive of people is almost collectively the same. There's a small percent that feel that they're in control, and that small percent in control is misdirecting our awareness. And so it's a time of change and coming back to nature again.
So I would love to believe that. My problem is, 1969, we got the siege from Apollo, but then you just told us, 15 minutes ago, from 1970 to now, we've lost 2/3 of, the life on the planet. But the people who run the corporations are us. I mean, I worry that, I don't know how old, the Facebook Zuckerberg is, but I don't know if I want to trust him with the future of the planet. So I'm wondering if there's two kinds of things going. I mean, what you're talking about, and what I would love to say, that I do say amen to, is sort of going back to this organic human with humus, earthling with the earth, that kind of summer of love, 1968 kind of thing. Okay, I get that. What I'm worried about is we're going even more extremely into the alien invader mentality, and we're creating a civilization that is not going to be so, dependent on the blood of dinosaurs, or, decayed dinosaurs turned into fuel, fossil fuels, but it's going to become this ethereal, internet kind of thing. It's rather than a carbon-based life form, we're going to go to a silicon-based life form, and we're going to lose humanity in the process and become transhuman, that we're going to have less and less and less connection to the physical, because we will not value it, and we'll value instead the ethereal or the mental, and that's where the money is, and that's where the attraction is. I mean, does your optimism hold up when you look at where corporations are going?
Oh, absolutely, because I'm dealing myself with what are called conscious corporations. So there's a new vision. There's actually a new classification of corporations that are based on community and harmony. They get a whole different structure. I can't remember if it was a Corp G or something. There's a separate name for it. And so we're moving into more conscious corporations. Now, it's in an interface, of course. So we're moving out of give me all the money you can, to a world where, look, there's not going to be jobs anyway. I use a video in my lectures of the Tesla plant here in California. And when I show people this whole plan, it's like the car's being built and you don't see any people around. Right. It's all being done by machine. And the reality is, so what does that mean? Does that mean we're all just out of work and dying? No, it means there's going to be a change in how the whole civilization is going to run, only because if it doesn't change, disaster is looming, and that'll be that. And there'll be people who are going to hold on to the end, hold on, that's going to come back again. It's like, no, we're not going back to anything. We're moving forward to something new. And that something new is just like, well, no, on the surface, it really looks crappy. I have to admit, I mean, I don't like looking at the newspapers every day, but then I look at, there's two parts of me, the guy who lives here in the States and has his home in California. And there's the guy who's a little bit outside of this, looking at this giant picture of the planet, evolution, environment, cellular stuff, all that. And there's two different aspects. And so, I sit here in California, look at the news and go, oh my God, I can't believe this. And then I step back into my perspective view and go, every bit of this is a necessary element to transition from A to B. And if it doesn't happen, it would actually be worse. If there was no chaos, it would be a much more disastrous sign, because it said nobody's moving. And the process we are moving, where are we moving to? That's a cool, cool question. But is there an answer? And the answer is not really right now. In the world of quantum physics and mechanics, which is the mechanisms of the universe, there's a very important concept called emergence. And emergence means when things come together, outcomes become different than you could ever imagine by knowing what all the individual pieces do. In other words, for example, you can study a transistor and a capacitor, and you could study a resistor, and you can study a chip at this level as a switch. Knowing all those little pieces, you don't see a computer. It was the computer had to be put together from the pieces. Studying, I'm an expert on resistors, yeah, but I have no idea what the hell a computer is. And so putting all the pieces together results in something that you couldn't imagine if you knew what every piece was doing independently before they were assembled. Now, that analogy applies to this. The world is changing so quickly. New information is coming in so fast that we cannot really accurately predict anything about what's going to happen, because the nature of this quantum mechanical universe is things emerge, boom, they came out of something you didn't even see. And so I sit here with, okay, man, keep my eyes open, watch this thing happening here, watch it from A, not being involved in it by pulling outside of it, because when we talk about biology and life and energy, there are things you can do that can change the world, and there are things that don't do anything but use up your energy, which is your life. And when we start to realize to put our energy into the things that will sustain us and stop fighting the things that when you fight something, you lose your energy in it. Use that illustration. I show two wires, one with a positive end, one with a negative end. And the moment you touch them together, sparks and fire and flames and everything, and the two wires melt and you got nothing left. I say, the energy, if you take your energy to fight an opposite energy, then you're going to neutralize your energy. It's going to cancel out. It's wasted.
So I'm going to jump in because we're going to run out of time, but this notion of energy is really important. And in the essay, in the September-October issue of Spirituality and Health, this essay called How and Why to Let Go of Fear, you've got this wonderful sidebar that says, it's entitled The Do's and Don'ts of Evolution. And then you say, because you are an energy field, and that's where you're taking us now. And then you list these four things. So by way of closing, I don't want to shortchange it too much, but I do, I'm aware that we're going to go over time here. But I'm going to go through this anyway with you, because it was so fascinating and it's so counterintuitive. So I'm going to just read you each of the four points. And if you can just elaborate a little bit on each one, that's how we'll bring this conversation to a close. So you say, because you are an energy field, don't try to change other people.
Yeah. And the reason is this, that each individual is a creator unto themselves. And this involves, and I'm going to use the word spirituality, but if I just want to go into the realm of quantum physics, I say field, because field, the definition of field is invisible moving forces that influence the physical world. And by coincidence, the definition of spirit is invisible moving forces that influence the physical world, that there's a coming together of an understanding here about this energy. And the relevance, each one of us is a creator. And when we are creating, we're using our conscious and our subconscious minds. This is really cool. And the whole idea about this is, though, I cannot change your conscious or subconscious mind. I can talk to your conscious mind. You can listen to what I'm going to say, but that will not change your programming, that all of us have been programmed. And that if you don't understand that you've been, that somebody else is programmed, and then you're going to try and talk to their program to ask them to change. It's like this, either an old-fashioned tape recorder or a current like CD recorder is a machine that makes a program. You record a program, you push a button, and the program plays all over and over and over and over again. And I go, so here's the issue. The subconscious mind is the equivalent of the player. It's got habits, which are programs. So when you push the button, they just play over again. Well, the point about it is simply this. if a person has a habit and you're trying to talk to them and use your energy to help them see a better way and everything, the idea is this: that subconscious mind doesn't respond to that. There's nobody in the subconscious mind. Try to have a discussion with your subconscious mind. It's like, well, have a discussion with a CD player. You know, just say, hey, the program's not, I don't like this program. So go up to the player and say, you know, you could do a better program than that. You know, I don't like this one. I say, well, how much talking to the CD player will it take before the program changes? The answer, you can talk to your blue in the face. It's never going to change. Now, a person who you know, other people, including yourself, we have the conscious mind, the subconscious is the CD player with programs. And science has revealed that the programs in the subconscious run 95% of our lives. So if someone's having trouble with their life and their conscious mind running only about 5%, which is their spirit or feel connection, has all their wishes and desires, that's the creative mind. And they come to you and they say, oh, my life is blah, 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 and blah, blah. I go, this is really cool. They're talking to you this. And I said, then you're going to talk back. And I'm going to say, and the problem is this, their behavior is coming from the subconscious. It has nothing to do with the conscious mind. And you're not going to change the subconscious mind by talking to them, because that's not how it changes. So you put in all your beautiful effort to give them every reason why life would be better if they did this and this. And then they walk away. And guess what? They're playing a program. They're going to play the same damn program they've been playing it, because that does not change a program. So trying to talk somebody into change, they're the ones that have to decide to push the record button, in a sense, on their subconscious and put new programs in.
But you can do this for yourself, because you do say focus on yourself. So if I'm 95%, if I'm being run, if 95% of my life is being run from my unconscious, can the 5% change that? Within me, so I can change myself, but not you.
No, you can't change me, because I'm the only one that's going to have access to my program. So
that was my point.
Change the program. You can talk to me all you want, but I'm not changing the program.
Right.
Because most people don't even know they have the program, and that's why it's invisible. It's like they come with open heart. Please help me. I need this help. You give them all this help, and then they walk away and they still do the same thing. It's because the behavior was not coming from that conscious mind.
Okay, so that's the takeaway is that, okay, I can't change you, but I can change. I have access to my own subconscious mind. I can make the changes. So let's go through the next three, the other three, and I'm afraid we're going to have to do it a little bit shorter. But you say it's fascinating. Because you are an energy field, don't try to change the system.
That's just very briefly the image I showed of two wires coming together, each one energy, one we'll call positive, one we'll call negative. When you bring those wires together and they touch, that's called a short circuit. The short circuit results in a flame and a melting and sparks and the wire, and then all the energy disappears and the wire is melted and nothing happened. You wasted the energy. It didn't change anything. So the idea is this: if the system has got this powerful movement of energy and you say, I'm going to take my energy and go in there and fight that system, I say, well, that's taking your wire and touching it to this opposite voltage, the other side, the polarity. And as a result, you are not changing them. You have much less energy than they have. You're going to burn up your wire and you're going to run out of energy. I say, well, what did you change? And the answer is nothing.
Nothing. And that's why you say put your energy into constructing a new system.
Absolutely. Step outside. But guess what? You won't be alone, because everybody else is looking for where the hell can we go and get the heck out of this place.
And that's really, and that's really your third one, which is don't spend your life protesting. Instead, find out who's protesting with you and band together and create this new system.
Right. Because if you add your positive, if everybody around you is positive energy, then by definition, you have a massive positive force. Okay. And that force is so big, as more and more people join, that's the energy that creates the world. Now, it's kind of funny, because we have to take this jump that's so, for the average person on the street, it's like, what? I'm going to go, the fact of science is a fact that the most valid science on this planet is quantum physics. There's nothing more valid as science on this planet. And quantum physics has the fullest understanding that our consciousness is creating this thing we experience called life and the planet and all this stuff like this, and that we're in energy fields and that we're manipulating energy and all this stuff, and that when we start to recognize we're energy, it says, well, your energy is your life. I mean, they've always said that, that you got a lot of energy, you got a lot of life. And so our energy is our life. And when you start to dissipate your energy and add it to things that have no feedback, you know, if you add your energy to something and it grows, you go, oh, well, I'm investing my energy and it's going to get bigger and I'm sharing energy and that's great. And I say, if you put your energy into something that has no feedback for you, then what you've done is just you've dissipated your own life source. And the whole reality is you must step outside this and recognize, create this other world on the outside. That's the only way evolution has ever occurred. It doesn't work from changing the inside. It works just from creating a new outside.
Yeah, so don't protest, invest. I think that's a good one.
Well, that works for me.
Well, I took it from what you just said. So here's the last one, and this will be the last point we're gonna make tonight. You say, because you are an energy field, don't become frightened or angry or burned out. And that's what a lot of people are dealing with right now for a variety of reasons. We're frightened and we're angry and we're burned out. But you have a positive message. So let's close with that.
Well, the positive message very clearly is that our biological system is either in growth or protection. And I say, I mean that either the energy of your biology is moving toward growth and helping you stay alive and keep your system healthy and running and vital and providing all that energy of life, or you're in protection. And when I say, or you're in protection, means this, that then you allocate your energy for walling yourself off. Growth is you go out and you're open to assimilate things and take it in. So you go toward something positive with your arms open to assimilate a positive stimulus into your life, growth. And I say, but if the stimulus is negative, A, you don't go toward it, and B, you don't go with your arms open, you close yourself down and move away. So here's the simple point. You cannot move forwards and backwards at the same time. You cannot be open and closed at the same time. The conclusion is you cannot be in growth and in protection at the same time. That the idea of protection takes our energy from our body away from the growth mechanisms and gets us ready for fight or flight. And the relevance about that is then you've compromised your growth. And more importantly, the immune system interferes when you, if you're running away from a saber-toothed tiger and you've got a bacterial infection, how would you split your energy while you're running away? How much would you fight the bacteria with and how much would you put toward running away from the tiger? And the obvious answer is the hell with the bacteria. I mean, all the energy is going to be running away from the tiger. The story and analogy that's very important is this, that when we have fears and threats of the outside world, the stress hormones shut down the immune system. The immune system is internal protection. And it uses a tremendous amount of your vital energy. I mean, if you ever get sick, you know, sometimes you don't have energy to get out of bed. So the immune system is a heavy drain on energy. If you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger, the body releases stress hormones to allocate the energy for fight or flight. And at the same time, it shuts down the immune system so that the available energy is all used for running away. The problem is that when this fight or flight growth duality existed or was created millions of years ago, the only thing we ran away from was a saber-toothed tiger. And once you got away from the tiger, there was no more stress on your life. So stress was only used for a short intermittent period because it shuts down growth and it shuts down the immune system. And then we find, well, look at today's world. Turn on a TV, look on the internet, read a newspaper, and you realize you were constantly dripping stress hormones into the system. The consequence is twofold. One, you stop the maintenance and growth of the body, which leads to a physical breakdown. And secondly, you are also shutting down the immune system, which opens you up and you're rife for infection. And all of a sudden you see, look at the healthcare crisis we're facing. And everyone thinks, oh, it must be genes and stuff like that. And it turns out genes are responsible for less than 1% of the disease issues that we have. It's lifestyle and environment that are shaping 90% or more of our illness. And so here we are in a healthcare crisis looking for somebody to give you a drug when it's like, no, it's our consciousness. It's our stress levels. These are the direct causes of the illness on this planet. And the programming, of course, that we got in the first 7 years has been disastrous for us, because that's when we're running 95% of our life from the subconscious. It primarily is driving habits that we acquired before age seven. The idea that we've been programmed, you know, the movie The Matrix, everyone thinks is science fiction. No, the movie The Matrix is a documentary. Everyone biologically has been programmed between the last trimester of pregnancy and age seven. Even our cousins, and I use that loosely, the Jesuits, had a saying for 400 years, give me a child until it's seven and I will show you the man. The point is very clear. It's over 400 years that people have known how you can program somebody for the first 7 years and then by that definition control the outcome of their life, which now we know is due to the fact that 95% of our life is coming from that program. And I say, we've been programmed much more effectively than the Jesuits knew about programming in the world in which we live right now.
So the answer is take the red pill. using your Matrix analogy, we're going to have to end it with that. Take the red pill. Go ahead.
One word on this, because people have done this without even knowing it, and it's my book called The Honeymoon Effect. And basically says this, your life could suck every day, blah, 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 every day. And then you meet this person, and 24 hours later, you're like, oh, my God, life is beautiful. It's heaven on earth. I'm healthy. I'm happy. I'm enjoying my life. And I go, that was available the entire time, but it was falling in love. Science recognized represents the red pill because it keeps us mindful, keeps us in the conscious mind, and we stop defaulting to the subconscious program. And I say, look what happens the moment you stop playing the program. And the answer is you created heaven on earth.
Ah, now that is a great place to stop. Our guest today was Dr. Bruce Lipton. His essay, How and Why to Let Go of Fear, appears in the September-October issue of Spirituality and Health magazine. You can learn more about his work at brucelipton.com. Bruce, this was amazing conversation. Thank you for all of this input, and boy, this could have gone on for hours.
So I wish it could have. Thank you so much for the opportunity, and Ezra, thank you back there for helping us get this moving along the road here. But especially thanks to the audience, because our future is in your way of life.
Support for this show comes from the world-famous annual International Yoga Festival in Rishikesh, India. Deepen your practice, explore your soul, and expand your consciousness with yogis from around the world. And do so in the lap of the Himalayas, the birthplace of yoga. Learn more at internationalyogafestival.org. Essential Conversations with Rabbi Rami is a project of Spirituality and Health magazine. Log into spiritualityhealth.com to subscribe to the magazine in print or digital formats and download the iTunes app for this podcast. Essential Conversations is produced by Ezra Baker, and our program coordinator and executive producer is Alma Tassi. I'm Rabbi Rami. Thanks for listening.
I'm Michelle Phillips, a celebrity makeup artist, beauty expert, self-confidence coach, and Hay House author. My podcast, Beauty and Beyond, is the place for women navigating the challenges of the aging process. Listen in for my professional advice, as well as my expert guests, as we share valuable tips, practical tools, and empowering resources to help you not only look amazing, but also live an amazing life. Part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network and available wherever you get your podcasts.